Well, Sinclair has retired to the kitchen with a bottle of cider so that she can enjoy listening to herself reading a bit of Dylan Thomas poetry. This is in response to all of those of you who've written to me asking for a bit more storytelling from Synchro. And it's a very funny piece of work, and you get to hear her with a bit of a Welsh lilt doing a bit of Welsh work, isn't it? So this is the outing from Dylan Thomas. Nothing serious in this. This is just for your joy and entertainment. And I'll be back with you in 20 minutes or so.
The outing. A story. If you can call it a story, there's no real beginning or end, and there's very little in the middle. It is all about a day's outing by Shadowbank to Port Cowell, which, of course, the Shadowbank never reached, and it happened when I was so high and much nicer. I was staying at the time with my uncle and his wife. Although she was my aunt, I never thought of her as anything but the wife of my uncle, partly because he was so big and trumpeting and red-hairy and used to fill every inch of the hot little house like an old buffalo squeezed into an airing cupboard, and partly because she was so small and silk and quick and made no noise at all as she whisked about on padded paws, dusting the china dogs, feeding the buffalo, setting the mouse traps that never caught her. And once she sneaked out of the room to squeak in a nook or nibble in the hayloft, you forgot she had ever been there. But there he was, always a steaming hulk of an uncle, his braces straining like hawsers, crammed behind the counter of the tiny shop at the front of the house, and breathing like a brass band, or guzzling and blustery in the kitchen over his gutsy supper, too big for everything except the great black boots of his boots. As he ate, the house grew smaller. He billowed out over the furniture, the loud Czech meadow of his waistcoat littered as though after a picnic, with cigarette ends, peelings, cabbage stalks, bird's bones, gravy, and the forest fire of his hair crackled among the hooked hams from the ceiling. She was so small she could hit him only if she stood on a chair. And every Saturday night at 10:30, he would lift her up under his arm onto a chair in the kitchen so that she could hit him on the head with whatever was handy, which was always a china dog. On Sundays, and when pickled, he sang high tenor and had won many cups. The first I heard of the annual outing was when I was sitting one evening on a bag of rice behind the counter, under one of my uncle's stomachs, reading an advertisement for sheep dip, which was all there was to read. The shop was full of my uncle, and when Mr. Benjamin Franklin, Mr. Weasley, Noah Bowen and Will Sentry came in, I thought it would burst. It was like all being together in a drawer that smelt of cheese and turps and twist tobacco and sweet biscuits and snuff and waistcoat. Mr. Benjamin Franklin said that he had collected enough money for the Shadowbank and 20 cases of pale ale and £1 apiece over that he would distribute among the members of the outing when they first stopped for refreshment. And he was about sick and tired, he said, of being followed by Will Sentry. All day long, wherever I go, he said, he's after me like a collie with one eye. I got a shadow of my own and a dog. I don't need no Tom, Dick or Harry pursuing me with his dirty muffler on. Will Sentry blushed and said, it's only oily. I got a bicycle. A man has no privacy at all, Mr. Franklin went on. I tell you, he sticks so close I'm afraid to go out the back in case I sit in his lap. It's a wonder to me, he said, he don't follow me into bed at night. Wife won't let, Will Sentry said. And that started Mr. Franklin off again, and they tried to soothe him down by saying, don't you mind Will Sentry. No harm in old Will. He's only keeping an eye on the money, Benji. Aren't I honest? Asked Mr. Franklin in surprise. There was no answer for some time. Then Noah Bowen said, you know what the committee is. Ever since Bob the Fiddle, they don't feel safe with a new treasurer. Do you think I'm going to drink the outing funds, like Bob the Fiddle did? Said Mr. Franklin. You might, said my uncle slowly. I resign, said Mr. Franklin. Not with our money, you won't, Will Sentry said. Oh, put dynamite in the salmon pool, said Mr. Weasley, but nobody took any notice of him. And after a time, they all began to play cards in the thickening dusk of the hot, cheesy shop, and my uncle blew and bugled whenever he won, and Mr. Weasley grumbled like a dredger, and I fell to sleep on the gravy-scented mountain meadow of my uncle's waistcoat. On Sunday evening, after Bethesda, Mr. Franklin walked into the kitchen where my uncle and I were eating sardines with spoons from the tin, because it was Sunday and his wife would not let us pay drafts. She was somewhere in the kitchen, too. Perhaps she was inside the grandmother clock, hanging from the weights and breathing. Then a second later the door opened again, and Will Sentry edged into the room, twiddling his hard round hat. He and Mr. Franklin sat down on the settee, stiff and mothballed and black in their chapel and funeral suits. I brought the list, said Mr. Franklin. Every member fully paid. You ask Will Sentry. My uncle put on his spectacles, wiped his whiskery mouth with a handkerchief big as a Union Jack, laid down his spoon of sardines, took Mr. Franklin's list of names, removed the spectacles so that he could read, and then ticked the names off one by one. Enoch Davis, aye. He's good with the fists, you never know. Little Gerwine, very melodious bass. Mr. Cadwallader, that's right. He can tell opening time better than my watch. Mr. Weasley, of course. He's been to Paris. Pity he suffers so much in the Charabanc. Stopped us 9 times last year between the Beehive and the Red Dragon. Noah Bowen, ah, very peaceable. He's got a tongue like a turtle dove. Never an argument with Noah Bowen. Jenkins Lacher, keep him off economics. It cost us a plate glass window. And 10 pints for the sergeant, Mr. Jervis. Very tidy. He tried to put a pig in the charra, Will Sentry said. Live and let live, said my uncle. Will Sentry blushed. Sinbad the Sailor's Arms, got to keep in with him. Old O. Jones. Why Old O. Jones, said Will Sentry. Old O. Jones always goes, said my uncle. I looked down at the kitchen table. The tin of sardines was gone. By gee, I said to myself, Uncle's wife is quick as a flash. Cuthbert Johnny Fortnight, now there's a card, said my uncle. He whistles after women, Will Sentry said. So do you, said Benjamin Franklin, in your mind. My uncle at last approved the whole list, pausing only to say when he came across one name, if we weren't a Christian community, we'd chuck that Bob the Fiddle in the sea. We can do that in Port Cowell, said Mr. Franklin. And soon after that he went. Will Sentry no more than an inch behind him, their Sunday bright boots squeaking on the kitchen cobbles. And then, suddenly, there was my wife's uncle standing in front of the dresser, with a china dog in one hand. By gee, I said to myself again, did you ever see such a woman? If that's what she is. The lamps were not lit yet in the kitchen, and she stood in a wood of shadows with the plates on the dresser behind her shining like pink and white eyes. If you go on that outing on Saturday, Mr. Thomas, she said to my uncle in her small silk voice, I'm going home to my mother's. Holy mo, I thought, she's got a mother. Now that's one old bald mouse of 105 I won't be wanting to meet in a dark lane. It's me or the outing, Mr. Thomas. I would have made my choice at once, but it was almost half a minute before my uncle said, Well then, Sarah, it's the outing, my love. He lifted her up, under his arm, onto a chair in the kitchen, and she hit him on the head with the china dog. Then he lifted her down again, and then I said good night. For the rest of the week, my uncle's wife whisked quiet and quick round the house with her darting duster. My uncle blew and bugled and swole, and I kept myself busy all the time, being up to no good. And then at breakfast time on Saturday morning, the morning of the outing, I found a note on the kitchen table. It said, "There's some eggs in the pantry. Take your boots off before you go to bed." My uncle's wife had gone as quick as a flash. When my uncle saw the note, he tugged out the flag of his handkerchief and blew such a hubbub of trumpets that the plates on the dresser shook. "It's the same every year," he said, and then he looked at me. "But this year it's different. You'll have to come on the outing." And what the members will say, I dare not think. The charabanc drew up outside, and when the members of the outing saw my uncle and me squeeze out of the shop together, both of us cat-licked and brushed in our Sunday best, they snarled like a zoo. "Are you bringing a boy?" asked Mr. Benjamin Franklin as we climbed into the charabanc. He looked at me with horror. "Boys is nasty," said Mr. Weasley. "He hasn't paid his contributions," Will Sentry said. "No room for boys. Boys get sick in charabancs." "So do you, Enoch Davis," said my uncle. "Might as well bring women." The way they said it, women were worse than boys. "Better than bringing grandfathers." "Grandfathers is nasty too," said Mr. Weasley. "What can we do with him when we stop for refreshments?" "I'm a grandfather," said Mr. Weasley. 26 minutes to opening time," shouted an old man in a Panama hat, not looking at his watch. They forgot me at once. "Good old Mr. Cadwallader," they cried, and the charabanc started off down the village street. A few cold women stood at their doorways, grimly watching us go. A very small boy waved goodbye, and his mother boxed his ears. It was a beautiful August morning. We were out of the village and over the bridge and up the hill towards Steeplechat Wood when Mr. Franklin, with his list of names in his hand, called out loud, "Where's old O. Jones? Where's old O? We've left old O behind. Can't go without old O." And though Mr. Weasley hissed all the way, we turned and drove back to the village, where, outside the Prince of Wales, old O. Jones was waiting patiently and alone with a canvas bag. "I didn't want to come at all," old O. Jones said, as they hoisted him into the charabanc and clapped him on the back and pushed him on a seat and stuck a bottle in his hand. "But I always go." And over the bridge and up the hill and under the deep green wood and along the dusty road we wove, slow cows and ducks flying by, until, "Stop the bus," Mr. Weasley cried. "I left my teeth on the mantelpiece." "Never you mind," they said. "You're not going to bite nobody." And they gave him a bottle with a straw. "I might want to smile," he said. "Not you," they said. "What's the time, Mr. Cadwallader?" 12 minutes to go," shouted back the old man in the Panama, and they all began to curse him. The charabanc pulled up outside the Mountain Sheep, a small, unhappy public house with a thatched roof like a wig with ringworm. From a flagpole by the gents fluttered the flag of Siam. I knew it was the flag of Siam because of cigarette cards. The landlord stood at the door to welcome us, simpering like a wolf. He was a long, lean, black-fanged man with a greased love curl and pouncing eyes. "What a beautiful August day," he said, and touched his love curl with a claw. That was the way he must have welcomed the Mountain Sheep before he ate it, I said to myself. The members rushed out, bleating, and into the bar. "You keep an eye on the charra," my uncle said. "See, nobody steals it now." "There's nobody to steal it," I said, "except some cows." But my uncle was gustily blowing his bugle in the bar. I looked at the cows opposite, and they looked at me. There was nothing else for us to do. 45 minutes passed like a very slow cloud. The sun shone down on the lonely road, the lost, unwanted boy, and the lake-eyed cows. In the dark bar, they were so happy they were breaking glasses. A shiny onion Breton man with a beret and a necklace of onions bicycled down the road and stopped at the door. "Quel un grand matin, monsieur," I said. "That's French, boy Bach," he said. I followed him down the passage and peered into the bar. I could hardly recognise the members of the outing. They had all changed colour. Beetroot, rhubarb and puce. They hollered and rollicked in that dark, damp hall like enormous ancient bad boys. And my uncle surged in the middle, all red whiskers and bellies. On the floor was broken glass and Mr. Weasley. "Drinks all round," cried Bob the Fiddle, a small, absconding man with bright blue eyes and a plump smile. "Who's been robbing the orphans? Who sold his little babby to the gypsies? Trust old Bob, he'll let you down." "You will have your little joke," said Bob the Fiddle, smiling like a razor, "but I forgive you, boys." Out of the fug and babble I heard, "Come out and fight." "No, not now, later." "No, now, when I'm in a temper." "Look at Will Sentry, he's proper snobbles. Look at his willful feet. Look at Mr. Weasley lording it on the floor." Mr. Weasley got up, hissing like a gander. "That boy pushed me down deliberate," he said, pointing to me at the door, and I slunk away down the passage and out to the mild good cows. Time clouded over. The cows wondered. I threw a stone at them, and they wandered, wondering away. Then out blew my uncle ballooning, and one by one the members lumbered after him in a grizzle. They had drunk the mountain sheep dry. Mr. Weasley had won a string of onions that the Shawnee Onion Man raffled in the bar. "What's the good of onions if you left your teeth on the mantelpiece?" he said. And when I looked through the back window of the thundering Shadowbank, I saw the pub grow smaller in the distance. And the flag of Siam, from the flagpole by the gents, fluttered now at half-mast. The blue bell, the dragon, the Star of Wales, the tush in the wall, the sour grapes, the shepherd's arms, the bells of Aberdovey. I had nothing to do in the whole wild August world but remember the names where the outing stopped and keep an eye on the Shadowbank. And whenever it passed a public house, Mr. Weasley would cough like a billy goat and cry, "Stop the bus, I'm dying of breath," and back we would have to go. Closing time meant nothing to the members of that outing. Behind locked doors they hymned and rumpused all the beautiful afternoon. And when a policeman entered the Druid's Tap by the back door and found them all in all choral with beer, "Shh," said Noah Bowen, "the pub is shut." "Where do you come from?" he said in his buttoned blue voice. They told him. "I got an auntie there," the policeman said, and very soon he was singing Asleep in the Deep. Off we drove again at last, the Shadowbank bouncing with tenors and flagons, and came to a river that rushed along among willows. "Water," they shouted. "Porth Cowl," sang my uncle. "Where's the donkey?" said Mr. Weasley. And out they lurched to paddle and whoop in the cool, white, winding water. Mr. Franklin, trying to pulker on the slippery stones, fell in twice. "Nothing is simple," he said with dignity, as he oozed up the bank. "It's cold," they cried. "It's lovely. It's smooth as a moth's nose. It's better than Porth Cowl." And dusk came down warm and gentle on 30 wild, wet, pickled, splashing men without a care in the world, at the end of the world in the west of Wales. "And who goes there?" called Will Sentry to a wild duck flying. They stopped at the hermit's nest for a rum to keep out the cold. "I played for Aberavon in 1898, said a stranger to Enoch Davis. "Liar," said Enoch Davis. "I can show you photos," said the stranger. "Forge," said Enoch Davis. "I'll show you my cap at home. Stolen." "I got friends to prove it," the stranger said in a fury. "Bribed," said Enoch Davis. On the way home, through the simmering, moon-splashed dark, Old Jones began to cook his supper on a primer stove in the middle of the charabanc. Mr. Weasley coughed himself blue in the smoke. "Stop the bus," he cried. "I'm dying of breath." We all climbed down into the moonlight. There was not a public house in sight. So they carried out the remaining cases and the primer stove and old Jones himself and took them into a field and sat down in a circle in the field and drank and sang while old Jones cooked sausage and mash and the moon flew above us. And there I drifted to sleep against my uncle's mountainous waistcoat. And as I slept, "Who goes there?" called out Will Sentry to the flying moon.
Dr. Rock's radio show. Thursdays 9 till midnight on peoplesinternetradio.com.